This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today we're talking to an amazing mom, all about her family's healing journey from devastating trauma. Sinead Soft's life changed forever the moment a house fire engulfed her baby Elizabeth as she slept in her cot. Elizabeth suffered third-degree burns over 60% of her body. Since then, she has undergone more than 70 operations at Birmingham Children's Hospital and is still undergoing grafts, reconstructive surgery and physiotherapy. She and her family face the world with smiles on their faces, determined to make the most out of every day.
Find the positive in every situation. It's very easy to find the negative in lots of things, in ourselves and the things we do, in life. And I think there's always a positive there, even in the most desperate of situations. You just have to look for it.
Welcome back to Brummy Mummies. My name is Zoe Chamberlain. I'm a journalist, author and mum. I launched Brummy Mummies as a community for families to help people to connect both online and in person. My goal is to share with you stories from the most inspiring mums and dads to help you find out how they juggle family life and everything that comes with it. I met Elizabeth and her family at the Pride of Birmingham Awards, where she was named a Child of Courage. She is a confident, enthusiastic and incredible little girl who has raised more than £200,000 for the hospital by running a mile a day for 26 days. I wanted to know more about this amazing family, their enormous journey into recovery and how they find their strength and solace. Hi, Sinead. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, on the day of the fire, your life just changed forever. Could you tell us briefly what happened that day and in the aftermath of that?
Yeah, sure. It was back in May 2014. We were living in the Middle East in Qatar. I had four children. Elizabeth was the youngest. I had just put her down for a nap, walked down the stairs. Within the space of, before I'd even got to the bottom of the stairs, I heard her cry, which was extremely unusual for Elizabeth. And I always say, if it had been one of the other children, I probably would have let them cry. As you do, you kind of, you know, you leave them to cry. But because she never cried, I went straight back upstairs. When I went straight back upstairs, literally the whole room was on fire. Her bed was on fire. The room was on fire. Everything. It was it's just a disaster, just the blink of an eye. I always liken it back to, you know, those ads you used to see at Christmas time when a Christmas tree would, you know, kind of go up just.
Yes.
It was just that quick, that instant. So she was obviously, she was on fire at that point. I took her out of the cot, passed her down, called an ambulance and just everything just kind of unraveled from there. Just pandemonium and devastation in the blink of an eye.
And what was it that had caused the fire?
It was a faulty air conditioning unit. So obviously it's very hot in the Middle East. And that time of year, it's about 45 to 50 degrees. So the air conditioning unit was on in her bedroom. From kind of in layman's terms, for simple people like me, it was faulty wiring. And it was described as a ticking time bomb. So, but obviously we didn't know. We rented a beautiful villa in, you know, what we thought was a safe home. And, the blink of an eye, it was just all gone.
So you were whisked straight over to Birmingham Children's Hospital?
No, no. First of all, we went to the local state hospital in Doha, Hamad Hospital. And within a very short period of time of arriving there, they told us that Elizabeth wouldn't survive if she was to stay in this country. And we were to try and, you know, kind of get her evacuated as soon as possible, which isn't, I found out, an easy task. It took 5 days to get her out of the country. There was promises of beds, all sorts of places, from Boston to Paris to all over the place. But there's very few places that treat burn injuries that extensive on children so small. We were eventually flown to London and from there transported up to Birmingham. So in the UK, there's only two places that treat burn injuries as severe as Elizabeth's, which is Bristol and Birmingham. So we were so lucky to get a bed for her.
And what was the impact of that on you as a family? I mean, you have three other children. It must have been so devastating for all of you.
It's the immediate impact. It's just, it's, you know, it's devastating. It's everything we owned was destroyed. Our family was broken up. My other three children stayed living in Qatar for about two, three weeks, I think, before we could get them out. My sister had flown over from Ireland to sit with them because we didn't have any, obviously we didn't have any family over there. And we just abandoned everything, our home, our lives, our other children, our jobs.
And how did you, as a mom, try to comfort and support and reassure your children, particularly when you were feeling so devastated yourself?
I think it probably strangely having other children helped because, you know, as a mother, when something so devastating happens, you just want to curl up in a ball and, you know, lie with whoever needs you at that time. And not being able to do that, obviously, is, you know, and I've Daniel and Amelia, who were six and four at the time, we dropped them to school that morning and never picked them up and didn't see them for 2-3 months afterwards. So it was very, very traumatic for the children. But I suppose as a mother, you put everyone in front of yourself. You think you're doing the right thing at that moment in time. I've probably done the wrong things lots of times. That probably when they're teenagers, they'll come back and tell me all the things I've done wrong. But I don't know. I just, as a mother, that's what you do, isn't it? I think you just put everyone in front of yourself and just try and do the best you can in a horrific, horrific time and horrific situation.
And Elizabeth has gone through so many operations and so much treatment. How did you all start to kind of recover in a healthy way? And I guess that's a journey that's full of up and downs.
Yeah, I think recovery, that was not something kind of for 2 months we even considered. It was not even something, you know, it was survival, I guess, for all of us, you know, and every day, you know, you take one step forward and 10 back. And that kind of went on for probably 2-3 months. So we never, probably for about 3 months, we never even considered the future. We literally just lived day to day. And then when we got to a point where they'd kind of told us Elizabeth would, you know, hopefully make it, you know, a good recovery. That's when we started to make plans, I suppose, to find school for the other children, to find a home to live in, because we lived in Ronald McDonald House in the Children's Hospital for about 5 months while our other children were in Ireland. So, you know, when we got to that point where we kind of felt we could kind of make roots, we decided to stay in Birmingham and, you know, they'd welcomed us as their own. And I don't know, the recovery, it's really hard, I suppose. It's we've got different ways of dealing with things. Liam's was to go back to work. He couldn't wait to get back to work, I suppose, just for, you know, some normality. For me, the recovery was probably helping the children settle in to a strange country. They'd never lived here before. You know, we always said we couldn't even have picked out Birmingham on a map of the UK. So for our other children, I think the recovery was trying to get them settled, make, you know, roots here, make friends here, be part of the community, which we've been, you know, we ended up living in King's Heath and we've stayed here. And we couldn't have asked for anything better, really. As I said, they embraced us, looked after us and loved us as one of their own. For me, my recovery is, and it's going to sound really bad as a parent, but it's removing myself from family life. even if it's only for 30 minutes to go for a walk with the dog or to go to the gym or just do something outside family life is how I refresh myself and deal to go back and start all over again.
And how have you helped Elizabeth to come to terms with and cope with her burns as she's got older? Because she was only 6 months, wasn't she?
She was. Happened,
so she's never known anything different.
No, she doesn't know anything different, which in some ways, I mean, there's positives and negatives to everything. In some ways, I feel it's better because she doesn't know any different. But in other ways, I feel, I wonder sometimes what sort of person she would be if she'd already had an opportunity to form a personality and how would those burns have impacted her if she was slightly older? Because I feel like her personality in some ways was kind of formed around her experiences because she was so young. I think from a we made a very conscious decision to involve her as much as we could within the community. And when we decided to live in, you know, to stay in Birmingham, live in King's Heath, before she was even discharged from hospital, I was taking her to play groups in the area. And I mean, she was heavily, heavily bandaged. You could only see her eyes, you know, at that point. And as difficult as it was, with obviously with people staring and asking questions and, you know, mostly out of kindness, just wants to, you know, want to know what happened to her. I think we felt as parents that we wanted her to be involved with as much as possible within the community, because these are the people that she would grow up with. These are the people she would go to school with, that she would, you know, go along to senior school to. And, you know, I suppose when people know you, it becomes, it's new people that experience Elizabeth that, you know, usually have a problem with, you know, her appearance or are curious sometimes. It's not always a problem. Whereas we thought if we got a lot of that out of the way and made roots within somewhere, that it would, I suppose, make it easier for her when she did start school, that it wasn't, there'd be some children that would be familiar with her that could say, oh, that's just Elizabeth. You know, we went to play group together or nursery or so. She's done everything from dancing to gymnastics to swimming to football, you name it, she's done it. And luckily she's gone along with everything that we've asked her to do.
Oh, she's absolutely amazing, isn't she? She's just so confident and enthusiastic about everything and so wise for her years. Where do you think she finds this strength? And do you think it'll help to empower her with everything she chooses to do in the future?
I think we have tried really hard. And as I say, you never know as a parent whether you're doing the right or wrong things with your children. But for Elizabeth, we've tried really hard to build her confidence and like that, surround her with people who will big her up and stand up for her maybe when she needs it. At the moment, she's well able to stand up for herself. She doesn't need an army of people. But I guess the world can be amazing, but it can also be very, very cruel. And having such a visual difference, you know, it gives you people a target, obviously. So we've always had in the back of our mind that if we, you know, surround ourselves with people, positive people, that in the army of people that maybe come along to break her down, she'll kind of be beyond that at that point. She'll kind of have built that confidence, built that resilience. I always feel with any child that you can tell them 20,000 times a day that they're amazing and they're beautiful and they're funny, or not even just a child, anyone. You can tell them the most positive things, but it's that one negative thing that will stick out that you remember. You remember as a child being called fat or being called short, or you don't remember all the wonderful things that you are. So I suppose for us, we've every day, we tell all our children, but probably more so Elizabeth, you know, you've one person has said something negative to you, you've got to remember all the hundreds of nice things people say to you, which is, it's really hard, isn't it? We tend to focus on the bad in ourselves all the time, which is, we try and teach Elizabeth not to do. And I read a quote recently, and it was these people who give you kind of bad opinions, you wouldn't go to them for advice. So why do we listen to the negative things that people say to us? We should be asking advice of people who big us up, people who are positive, people who are strong. So we've worked really hard to surround her with those sort of people in the hope that the future she'll be well able to fight her battles.
And she's 8 now. So how did she get on with starting school?
Brilliant. She's 8. She's got lots of friends. She's She's the same as any other little girl, I'd imagine. She's a snitch in school. She's a friend one minute, she's not friend next minute. She's just the same as any other little girl in school. Probably the part that she, as she gets older, she's struggling with is, as she's moved up key stages in school, you are exposed to different children. So the older children will all know Elizabeth, but when you get new children in the school, it's like starting all over again for her, because you get the stares and, you know, out of curiosity, the stares, you know, the questions, and it's kind of a period where she's back to the beginning again of, you know, having to explain the story, or I suppose cope with attention, unwanted attention, I suppose, for her, because she just wants to be a normal little girl, just having fun, running around, you know, causing trouble, doing what she shouldn't be doing.
But she's already so extraordinary in everything she's achieved, isn't she? I mean, she's raised more than £200,000 for Birmingham Children's Hospital by running a mile a day for 26 days. And that included when she was in isolation doing 73 laps of a garden. Is that right?
That's right.
I was just like, where did that idea come from?
Well, she'd had some surgery in, I think it was about Easter time. And her surgeon, who's been her surgeon since day one, he's fantastic. And he said, why don't you do some fundraising? We need a laser machine. It would be amazing for, you know, lots of children, including Elizabeth. They don't have this facility available for children. Well, they didn't at the time. They have it in the adult hospital, but not for children. And We just said, yeah. You know, we were in the middle of dealing with kind of a child post-op covered in bandages. But it's kind of in the back of your mind all the time. They need this equipment. What, you know, what can we do? And we knew it cost about between £130,000 and £150,000. So I'm a very much a not planner. So I don't plan for anything but what I'm doing in the next 5 minutes. It's a really bad, trait.
It's nice to live in the moment.
Well, I don't think my husband agrees, but he's very much a planner. So we're the total opposite, which maybe it works well. But it was me literally on the last day of June. I just said, well, it's a new month tomorrow. Why don't we do something? And I just said, what do you fancy doing? And Elizabeth said, true Elizabeth style, I'll run a marathon in a day. You know, it's not like I'll run a marathon over. This is like a 7-year-old little girl at the time. So we kind of broke it down into pieces, and it was a mile a day is what she would do. It started off great. Within a couple of days, she was a child in her class had unfortunately got COVID. And at that period of time, it was a 10-day isolation. So again, Elizabeth style, she was like, it's fine. I'll do the garden. So she measured the laps of the garden, which we've got a really tiny garden. It was 73 laps. She got everybody involved, from the neighbours, where it was really hot in the middle of the summer. They were hosing her down. They had music playing. We've got, we've got fantastic neighbours all around us. So everyone kind of got involved. Then she went back to school, and we had all sorts of plans. We were going to do some runs in iconic Birmingham landmarks to kind of make it a bit more interesting and to gain more attention for the fundraising. So, you know, the conservation park, and then we could tag them, and then it might kind of spur people on to be a bit more interested. But she was only back in school on the second day. I dropped her in the morning, and by 9:15, I had a phone call to come pick her up that somebody was positive for COVID.
Oh dear.
And I got back down to the school, and it's dreadful because, you know, some poor child had got COVID. But all I was thinking was, I can't run around that garden anymore. I just can't do it. So when I got to the school, her teacher was crying. I was crying. We were all crying for different reasons, but I was crying thinking, oh my God, how are we going to do this? Another 10 days. But she did it. Elizabeth was the only one who did every single mile. We all kind of drew straws every day. Who was going to, you know, who was going to go with her? It was like, oh, I did it yesterday. It's your turn. Oh no, it's you. You know, so she was just amazing. Tried to jazz it up a bit. And we did in fancy dress some days. Her, she's big into drama, and she's in a lovely drama group. And they had arranged a big run in our local park, in Kingsheath Park. And she missed it because she was in isolation. So her dad and siblings did it with all the other children. And we FaceTimed. So while me and Elizabeth did around the garden, they did it around the park. So it was really nice. And, you know, it was nice to be involved. But I won't say it was easy, because it wasn't easy.
No, gosh, it's an amazing achievement. Absolutely fantastic. So Elizabeth was named as a Child of Courage at the Pride of Birmingham Awards, and you must be so proud. Did she enjoy being a VIP at the event and meeting celebrities like Liberty Poole and Amy Dowden and Connor Ball?
Oh, she absolutely loved it. I think she was very overwhelmed on the day, and I think it was the following day that it kind of, I suppose for all of us, not just her, it kind of hit home a little bit. She had an absolute ball, though. Just the whole. I mean, she's big into everything and anything, but just to have somebody, you know, the guys from Strictly Come Dancing and Dancing on Ice was just like a dream come true for her. It was just lovely. The whole experience was it was just lovely from beginning to end. We all enjoyed it. It was, I mean, we all think she's fantastic, but just when other people do, you know, you kind of stop and think. I think I said to you on the night, you get involved in the daily humdrum of life of, you know, pick up your clothes, make your lunch, do everything that, you know, parents do. And just to stop for a second and actually realise how amazing she really is and to be celebrated. And all the children were celebrated, which was really important to me and Liam, because, you know, they get left out a lot. Elizabeth gets a lot of attention, and that can be negative attention or positive attention. It's still attention that's not on them. So the older two understand, but William's only a year older than Elizabeth, so it can be quite hard for him at times. So, I mean, he just worked that room like a celebrity going around in his little tux. He had an absolute ball. So it was really special, and it was even more special that we were, you know, all the children were included and made feel important. So it was, we couldn't have asked for anything better. And Elizabeth drunk, you know, Coke all night. So she had like six bottles of Coke, one after each other, and was running up and down the stage, and her and Liberty were on the stage making confetti. I don't know what they were doing, throwing it up in the air. They had an absolute ball.
Oh, that's wonderful. So we have a series of questions that we ask all of our guests. So what would be the two things you would tell your 18-year-old self if you had the chance?
Find the positive in every situation would probably be, you know, my first. It's very easy to find the negative in lots of things, in ourselves and the things we do in life. And I think there's always a positive there, even in the most desperate of situations. You just have to look for it. Sometimes it's harder to find the positive, but I think it's always there somewhere. You just have to sometimes dig a bit deeper. So that'll be probably the first thing. The second, probably buy Bitcoin. I'd be a billionaire by now. I've joined it too late. So yeah, buy Bitcoin. That would be my second one.
Brilliant. And what are three things that you love to do every day? You've already said how, you know, it's nice to get a bit of space for yourself and how important that is. What kind of gives you a great routine and start and end to the day?
I love bed. This is, I love a nana nap. It's like my favorite part of the day. I'm never at my most happiest, I don't think, than when I'm in bed. So probably starting my day, I've only very recently started to read some positive affirmations every morning, which was something I was never a big fan of, but only of recent times, probably the last 9 months, I've definitely slowed down on my life and taken more time. It's more time for self-care for me, which I always saw as being very overindulgent and selfish. But I think it's really important as parents. It's taken me a long time to realise, my eldest is 14 now, and I think it's taken me this long to realise that if I'm not healthy, you know, I can't be a good mother. I can't be, you know, I can't be present. So yeah, I've tried to definitely, I'm taking more time for me. I do the affirmations. I've started to practice some mindfulness, which again was something, I'm a goer. I'm always on, you know, I'm always busy. I thought mindfulness was something that was, again, a bit lazy, lying down and, you know, kind of doing nothing, whereas I was kind of always on the go. So I've started, literally only in the last probably 9 months, I've started to practice yoga. I'm not very good at it, but I do try. And it's just something away. It's just something away from, and something where you stop and think. And also reading. I've tried, again, in the last kind of 6 to 9 months, I'm doing a lot more reading. I'm listening to a lot more podcasts, which is something, again, I'd never done before. And audiobooks, something I do a lot of walking with my dog. So audiobooks I listen to a lot. So yeah, they're probably the things that that I love to do every day. But again, they're new things. It's constantly changing. It was boxing at one point. I loved to box because that was how I dealt with things. But now definitely slow down and I'm taking a lot more time for me.
I think that's so important. As you say, you need to look after yourself so you can look after the kids, don't you? And I think every parent needs to do that.
Yeah, I think though, like that, as any parent, I always felt it was like that self-indulgent, as I said, or you know, it's selfish, or, you know, there's a million things you could be doing. Like, I could put on that washing. I could do some ironing. I could run to the shop. I could pick up a child, whatever it is. But just to be able to do those things properly, I think it's really important that we look after ourselves. But as I say, I am very new to it and I'm still learning. And I think even if it's just 5 minutes every day, just to stop and, evaluate. I try and do the same at night time. I try. I'm not always very good at it because I do, as I say, I love sleep. So I do generally fall asleep quite early. But I do try and sit even for 2 minutes just to think about how the day went, how it could have gone better. You know, the positives of it, you know, maybe how tomorrow could be better. Maybe I could shout less. I could, you know, be calmer, whatever it is. I do try and evaluate, but that's as and when I can stay awake.
Very valuable thing to do. So what would be your advice to any family that's dealing with any kind of trauma?
I think trauma is so tricky. I think for me, I've spent the last, as you know, kind of 7 years probably motoring through trauma. I think everyone deals with it in different ways, and that's why I've probably got to the point of in the last 9 months where I've started to be a bit more mindful. I think it's very different for everybody. That's what got me through it, was motoring along. But actually, you know, I think a trauma has the potential to break up anybody. I think it's the potential to break up a family, to break up marriages, to break up in relationships, just every, you know, it's very easy to withdraw, to blame each other, to, it's just so easy and it can go one way or the other. We made a very conscious decision. I don't think it's something that happens by accident. We made a very conscious decision to stick together. I think we were apart for so long that I suppose it gave us that kind of, it gave us a snapshot into, you know, how life could be apart, and we didn't like it. As much as, you know, I like a break from the kids, I didn't like being apart from them. So I think it's made us stronger than it used to be, definitely, without a doubt. We have our ups and downs like anyone else. We scream, we shout, we, you know, but we've made a conscious decision to stick together. And it's definitely, it's the my father-in-law said to me last night, and you know, they've had their own family, you know, problems as well with disability within the family. And he just said, it's a binding. Trauma can be binding for a family, but then at the same time, I believe it can be it can pull you apart, but it's making those conscious decisions. I think talking is always the best thing. I didn't talk probably for a long time. And now, as I say, I've slowed down. You talk about things. Talking is definitely the best for everything.
Yes. And getting the children to talk as well.
Yeah, really important. Important to we've always been open and honest with the children. And I mean, they're very open themselves. They're very practical. They're quite grown up, I suppose, for their age. They've spent a lot of time hanging around hospitals, hanging around with adults. So it's, they're very open, very honest with us. And yeah, which is sometimes, they're open and honest. They'll tell me when I don't look good, or tell me when I've got a spot in my face, or, you know, I've put on weight. It's got pluses and negatives. But yeah, I think how you deal with it, you never know. You just never know. And it's survival at the beginning. And then it's taken time to stop and look and just realise what's actually gone on. And it's taken me this long to realise what we've been through over the last kind of 7 years.
And you should be so proud of everything that you all have achieved. I mean, we just, you struck us at the Pride of Birmingham Awards as just what an amazing family you are, and so positive throughout. It's just a joy to meet you all. And thank you so much for talking to me today on the
podcast.
Oh,
thanks for having us. Thank you.
You can read Elizabeth and Sinead's full story on our Brummie Mummies Facebook page and on the Birmingham Live website. This is a Laudable production brought to you by Brummie Mummies and Birmingham Live. You can download or stream the podcast on all major platforms, including Spotify and Apple. Be sure to follow our Brummy Mummies Facebook page for lots more family information. And whilst there, sign up for our free newsletter to make sure you never miss an episode. See you next time.